In the year 2000, the St. Louis Rams made it to the Super Bowl.
They have gone from dreadful to dominant, seemingly overnight, led by the best human interest story in sports in years, their quarterback, Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner was an unlikely hero. He spent years working in a grocery store and playing arena football before he got his chance to play in the NFL at 27 years old. And he only got a shot with the Rams because no other team wanted him. And the team's starting quarterback suffered a season-ending injury. The Rams became known as the greatest show on turf, powered by legendary players like Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, and Marshall Faulk. They became the most explosive offense in the league, which propelled them to the championship game. They squared off against the Tennessee Titans, a team that mounted their own legendary playoff run on their way to the Super Bowl. Warner was battered in the first half and played through a rib injury for the rest of the game. With 2 minutes left, the Rams held the lead by one touchdown. But the Titans found themselves with a final chance to even the score. They marched downfield to within 10 yards of the goal line with 6 seconds left. Enough time for one last play.
One play from the 10, probably the final play of the game.
The ball is snapped. The Titans quarterback throws to receiver Kevin Dyson, who catches it 5 yards from the end zone. He turns and steps toward the goal line, 4 yards from the end zone. Rams defender Mike Jones, a Missouri native, dives and seizes hold of Dyson's waist, 3 yards from the end zone. To score, Dyson only needs the very tip of the ball to break the plane of the end zone before his body hits the ground. They begin to fall, 2 yards from the end zone. Dyson stretches his arm and the ball as far as he can reach, 1 yard from the end zone. Their bodies crash to the ground.
Mike Jones made the tackle! And the Rams have won the Super Bowl!
Goal line! The game is over! The game is over!
The moment becomes known simply as the tackle. 2 years later, Kurt Warner and the Rams return to the Super Bowl, but lose to another unlikely hero who would win his first NFL championship, the New England Patriots, Tom Brady. Two championship runs in 3 years enshrined the team in St. Louis history, making them part of the fabric of civic pride in the region. The Rams weren't quite as explosive in the following years, but fans stuck with them, even as success became more elusive. Then, in 2015, St. Louisans learned that the team's owner, Stan Kroenke, wanted to move the team back to Los Angeles. In a 29-page document making a case for the move, Kroenke seemed to take extra effort to deride St. Louis. He called it a struggling town that could not support three professional sports franchises. That any team based here, quote, would be on the road to financial ruin, end quote. Publicly, Kroenke had been saying he was working with St. Louis to make necessary upgrades to the stadium where the team played. But the Los Angeles Business Journal reported that Kroenke had purchased land in Inglewood, California, long before submitting his request to move the team. To ink the deal with the NFL, Kroenke agreed to pay a $550 million relocation fee, an offer too good for the league to refuse. And after 21 seasons, the beloved St. Louis Rams were swept away to the West Coast. Kroenke became the most hated man in St. Louis. He was sued by the city, the county, and the regional sports authority, ultimately settling for $790 million. The city's share of that settlement was $250 million, and how that money should be used has been a point of contention ever since. But that conversation was reshaped in 2025 after an EF3 tornado tore through the city, causing $1.6 billion in damages. Most of it on St. Louis's historically disinvested north side. City leaders said they needed the money to replace aging infrastructure, like 100-year-old water mains. Business interests argued that investing the funds downtown would be more effective and lift the entire region. And community organizations wanted most, if not all, the settlement dollars to go toward tornado recovery. The last opportunity for the public to share was this past May at a Board of Aldermen committee meeting. Dozens of residents and advocates took turns to stand at the podium and share their thoughts and opinions about how the money should be spent.
Here's the fiscal reality. Downtown St. Louis makes up just 4% of the city's land, but it generates roughly 20% of the city's total tax revenue. That revenue does not stay in downtown. It funds schools, police, fire, and basic services in every neighborhood across the city.
The city has acknowledged that the Neighborhood Stabilization Program alone requires roughly $150 million. Your own numbers said that. So residents are trying to understand what exactly is unreasonable about allocating the amount you already identified was needed for recovery. See, there is a way to fund all of these buckets while still fully prioritizing North City recovery if the desire actually exists. North City should not still be negotiating for recovery a year later, and that's the hardest part for us.
We know that we have water mains that are aging. We also know that the treatment plants are struggling with issues with the pumping units that we rely on. These dollars will go back to the infrastructure that serves the entire city.
Then, this past June, the St. Louis Board of Aldermen voted 12-3 to approve a spending plan for a large bulk of that money. The plan was backed by the mayor and the board president. We'll explain how city leaders split up this money later in this episode. But first, a conversation between two St. Louis residents. One lives north of Del Mar and was impacted by the May 16th tornado. And the other lives and works downtown. We invited them to share their perspectives on what they believe are the greatest needs in their neighborhoods and what they'd like to see happen next to help their communities grow. Meet me at Midfield. I'm Luis Antonio Perez, and this is Meet Me, a project from St. Louis Public Radio about connecting across divides to find a way forward. In this episode, a conversation with Brendalyn King and Eli Front, two St. Louis residents deeply committed to their communities. Both grew up in the region, but they chose the places where they live today for very different reasons. They also have very different ideas for what their neighborhoods and St. Louis need to move forward, and what needs to happen to get us there. Brendalyn King lives in the Academy Sherman Park neighborhood in North St. Louis.
And I live there because as I was moving back to St. Louis, my grandmother was needing some support as she aged, and my mother was supporting her with a caregiver that was coming in. And I certainly thought that having her only granddaughter's hands available would be the way to support her through the end of life. So that was a major reason why I ended up back at my grandmother's house.
Brendalyn is 42 years old and an executive leadership coach. She grew up in St. Louis and is proud of her family roots here. Her grandmother was an educator and earned her college and graduate degrees back in the 1940s and 50s, a rare achievement for a Black woman during Jim Crow. Brendalyn invests her time and her money in her community through several community organizations and business enterprises. Eli Front lives in Laclede's Landing, a historic neighborhood downtown near the Arch.
I moved there because I was moving out of my parents' place, looking for some independence. And I'm really passionate about St. Louis, really passionate about the city, and visiting a bunch of different cities and neighborhoods. And I really fell in love with downtown, especially the history, the views, and the community and the Landing, and been super happy for the last 2 years living there.
Eli is 21 years old. A self-taught software developer, he recently co-founded a startup. He was coding professionally while still in high school and decided to skip college to continue building his career in tech. Eli is also a member of two neighborhood associations where he can participate in conversations about how to improve his community and grow the downtown economy. Both Brenda Lynn and Eli love St. Louis, and they've been following the fight over the Rams settlement funds closely.
I was aware because I was nauseated at the amount of times we were asked for community feedback over the past number of years. And it started to get frustrating to not have our answers actually acted on. So definitely knew about the money and was waiting to see what happened to it.
I was pretty young when the Rams initially left St. Louis, so I was kind of vaguely aware of that going on, but especially in the recent years online, I feel like everyone's got proposals and ideas they're throwing out, and in the news and on NPR, right, hearing different ideas. So I was definitely interested to see where it was going, and I've been following it, I'd say, pretty closely since the bill passed and beforehand.
I brought Brenda Lynn and Eli into the studio to talk with me and each other about their neighborhoods, what it's like to live there, and what could help them flourish. They asked each other their own questions, but I prepared a few questions for them to ask each other too.
Eli, would you describe your block? What would I hear, smell, and see if I stand on your street on a weekday at 8 a.m.?
So weekday at 8 a.m. right now, you're probably going to see small flood of tourists coming through the area. It can be pretty calm, though, I'd say, at 8 a.m. when most people haven't necessarily gotten their day going yet. You'll see the cobblestone streets. You'll see the historic old buildings, kind of giving you a vision into what St. Louis used to be like and kind of a little sneak peek into what the Arch Grounds used to look like before that was demolished. I really like hearing the trains come by, the Metrolink and the Amtrak and then the cargo coming by, just the train horns and the tracks. It's a really atmospheric sound of the neighborhood that I really love. Describe your block. What would I hear, smell, and see if I stand on your street on a weekday at 8 a.m.?
So a weekday at 8 a.m., you would see people leaving for their day. You know, I would say like 7:45, there are cars on the block, and by 8, it's empty. People are headed out to their destinations. And it's been interesting being in a tornado-impacted area because at 8 a.m. now, you'll hear a lot of construction. There are cranes coming by, dropping off drywall and roofing. A lot of men on roofs around the neighborhood. You'd see that quite a bit. Certainly seeing overgrown lots, a lot of greenery. It's like a lot of prairie grass, a lot of brush. And also at 8 a.m., I think you'd see some traffic coming down our block from Kings Highway, as we have one of the entry points from Kings Highway. Eli, what do you say to the people who think that downtown's best days are behind it?
I think those people probably don't spend a lot of time downtown. You look at the businesses who do take the leap and move down there, they're oftentimes the most successful locations they have across the whole metro area. All my neighbors are happy about where they live, and I think it's this issue of perception, where a lot of people do have this idea of maybe what downtown was or what a downtown is supposed to be, or maybe too much or too little focus on the area. But I don't see many of those people actually spend a significant amount of time downtown other than going to a sports game. So I don't think they can really say they know what it is or isn't. I think of the areas in St. Louis with potential, I think there's no other neighborhood in St. Louis that has the kind of cap of what it could be. There's so much the history, the space, the infrastructure, all the pieces are there to be something really incredible. And not to say that other neighborhoods can't improve and be great, but when I kind of say what is the max greatness this can be, downtown is really set up to be something amazing, and everything seems to be pointing towards upward momentum, and you can just kind of feel it if you spend enough time down there.
besides the infrastructure, what would you say downtown is missing? Because it seems like it has the infrastructure. What's missing?
Yeah, I think there is an issue of business attraction for sure. It's the grocery, it's the retail, it's the boutiques, it's those kinds of places. Because the amount of people coming downtown, tons and tons of people. We have the foot traffic, especially thanks to the conventions, the arch. What we don't have is either the right incentives or the right people in the business community taking needed risk to move and really make it serious investments in downtown.
Earlier, I mentioned how the May 16 tornado changed the conversation about where the RAM settlement funds should be spent. That's true for Brenda Lynn, too, who was directly impacted by the tornado that day.
May 16th, 2 p.m., I was entering a coaching call. I'm an executive leadership coach, and I knew that there was a storm coming, but usually Wi-Fi is pretty good in storms, so I'm going to continue my day. I also was excited because Washington University was hosting a meditation workshop that I was going to go to right after. And by 2:16 or so, I realized I needed to kind of cancel that call. I was receiving the alerts from the city on my text messages, and usually those alerts come as a precaution. And I was noticing them, but I was still planning to go meditate. I was really looking forward to that. And it's just something that at the end of the week on a Friday, you've had a bunch of clients just pour into you as their coach. Like, oh man, I just get to go sit in some silence. And there was a sound that came out of my phone at some point that was telling us that a storm was closer. And when I started hearing that sound, I also started hearing a bunch of hail come down. And so that was, okay, probably trying to hold me back from meditation. Do I really want to go drive out in some hail? Probably not. And at some point, I finally got a text from the city that said, take shelter now, with like a bunch of exclamation points, which I'd never seen before. And I did decide to go to my basement. And at that moment, I realized, I'm impacted by a tornado in this moment. I was with dogs. I was the only person at home. So I felt scared. It's not a feeling I feel often. And when I came up from the basement, my partner walked in the door. He was actually out driving and looked up, and we had lost all the windows to the back of our house, and a derelict property next door to us had a second floor deck build on that slammed into the back of our house and knocked down basically 5 layers of brick on one of our walls. A lot of our damage, you know, came from the building next door to us. If that building had been occupied and taken care of, maybe we wouldn't have had so much impact, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we came right after Forest Park. So after kind of all the trees left Union, we're right off of Union.
Wow.
So that was certainly unexpected. And from that point, you just kind of go into survival mode.
Today, more than a year later, Brendalyn's home is still in need of repairs from damage caused by the tornado, like many families. After the break, we'll hear the big ideas Eli and Brendalyn have for their communities. And they each share an issue that they see in their neighborhoods that money can't fix. Recently, the St. Louis Board of Aldermen decided what to do with $255 million of RAM settlement money. That's what inspired the conversation between me, Brendalyn King, and Eli Front. The Meet Me team wanted to hear their thoughts and opinions about where the money should go, especially as residents of two different parts of the city that face very different challenges.
Yeah, I think I'm generally in favor of investments into our city that are going to be durable, long-term investments that are kind of going to impact and support us for generations to come. And I think kind of my fear was we were going to make a bunch of short-term Band-Aids and not make serious commitments and improvements in neighborhoods where once the money dries up, they'll be right back where they started. If we think about this as the city is given this once-in-a-generation opportunity with this money, how can we utilize that once-in-a-lifetime to really change the trajectory of our city as a whole? And I think to do that, we need to make big bets that will have visible, significant impact in the long term.
I approach this a bit differently in that I think maybe I was hoping for the community feedback to actually be analyzed and data driven, that we would be finding patterns across people's input. It just seemed like, what was the point of asking so many times what should be done if we didn't get the report? You know, what was said? How many times was it said? From what neighborhood was that said from? And that might not have been the expectation even to have for that question. But it would be great to align with the community voice.
I was just interested, so from the community input opportunities you went to, what were kind of the top things that people were requesting?
Folks in neighborhoods were talking across the patterns of safety and revitalization. And so I would say I agree with you when you mentioned things that will deteriorate quickly. I think people were seeing that already and didn't want to repeat. So I know that the ideas from the city, like the Greenway that's happening, a lot of people were hinging their ideas on, okay, if that's going to happen, then I want to see, corner stores in neighborhoods. We want to see those walking paths lead to cafes. We want to see people walking their dogs to a park. We want to see them walking their children to a park. So I thought that was smart that community members were saying, if you're already going to do this, city, here's how we can have some ideas based on what's already moving forward.
What does your neighborhood need to improve?
To improve my neighborhood, given that it was impacted by the tornado, we need to rebuild homes, especially, I would say, apartment buildings. There's a really unique opportunity for multifamily units to be built. If you go down, for instance, just Union or Kings Highway, just how many apartment buildings are vacant post-tornado? Certainly, I would say residential, multifamily residences, so that families can be together, large families can be together. So that's the first thing. The next thing I would say is derelict properties need to be held accountable to the city enforcement, whatever that looks like, building codes at minimum. And then finally, I would say our greenery from the parks department, whatever that looks like, who's cutting the grass, who's cutting the tree limbs, who's pulling up the stumps, who's making sure a sidewalk is really a sidewalk, those things would be the top three that my neighborhood could use to improve. Eli, what does your neighborhood need to improve?
I think that we need, first and foremost, support on parking, especially in Laclede's Landing. We have, I think, had a challenge where, because a lot of the population coming to downtown in the area is transitory, there is a attempt to kind of gouge people on parking costs, because most of the people coming down are coming for the Cardinals games or they're coming as a tourist. I think it's no over-exaggeration to say that the Arch and the Convention Center really power the downtown population at this point.
Just to your point about transitory, what are the signs and signals that we're attracting people to come back and visit? What are those hooks? What are those, you know, there are like cities on my mind that I've been to that I'm like, oh, I want to go back to that place. How are we doing that downtown?
Yeah, I think I do want to give them a better experience of downtown, because that is their impression of St. Louis. It's not North City. It's not the Central West End. It's not the county. Like, downtown is what people are seeing when they come back and report how St. Louis was to the rest of the world. But they do often have a much more positive experience than St. Louisans have of downtown St. Louis. So you have a St. Louisan comes downtown, they spend some time there, they're probably going to have a pretty negative perception. I think it's just ingrained in a lot of people who've lived here for a while. But people who are not from here, it's a really positive experience. And I think a good way to kind of show that in like a proven way or evidence of this is you talk to the people who do currently live in downtown St. Louis. I can't confirm that it's a majority, but anecdotally, a majority of those people are not originally from St. Louis. They're people who are from out of town and have fallen in love with downtown St. Louis, and they didn't have this preconceived bias of the area going into it. Is there something your neighborhood needs that money can't fix?
I would say, given that I'm moving back to my neighborhood, one thing that I've seen work in other neighborhoods that requires no money are like incentives to be a block together. And whether that's like Porch Fest or a block party, something where you're all coming together, you're bringing one thing, or you're touring a home because it's historic, or you've just remodeled, but kind of that neighborhood block-to-block conversation. And I think, you know, given you're on a neighborhood association, you can kind of see the pathway to that. But I don't think that requires any money. I think having those neighborly events together, certainly, I want to see more of that. And Eli, is there something your neighborhood needs that money can't fix?
I don't know if money can't fix this, but one of the more intangible issues is outdated or no longer valid perceptions of downtown. Most people, when they hear The Landing, especially if they're older, they think bar, party, craziness. Really now, if you go there, it's a lot more quiet, residential, there's some businesses. I don't know if that's something that can be paid for or changed, but it really excites me that younger people who I kind of bring down to my place or bring down to my work, they really love it and they get really excited and they think it's so cool. And they're like, why did I never spend time here when I was growing up? And maybe we can't reach older generations, but how do we kind of impress on the new generation how exciting it is to be downtown?
Eli, you said something earlier that I thought every neighborhood might benefit from, which is, when is the last time you spent time in another neighborhood? And I'd ask you the same question. What parts of the North Side have you spent time in, and maybe your perception of those parts?
Yeah. One of my closest friends lives in Fountain Park. And actually, during the aftermath of the tornado, like right after it ended, drove straight to his place to help out. And flipped over cars, and it was a massacre, it was a disaster. And I spent a good amount of time with him there. And I think it's very exciting traveling to different neighborhoods around St. Louis, because each has their own unique identity. Each has a very unique feel. Like, we're a city of neighborhoods in so many ways. To be fair, I don't think I've spent as much time in North City as maybe some other neighborhoods. And maybe that's just, as a my demographic, I don't know as quite as many things to do in that area for what I'm looking for. But I think there's definitely some really exciting things going on in North City that I've enjoyed spending time at. In terms of North City, like, what would be like the big out of the box, if you have one, like big investment, big project that would really kind of transform the area? Like, what is like the thing that you kind of could see as the could kind of reimagine the area?
Yeah, I think Kings Highway has a great opportunity to be a large restaurant hub from Del Mar all the way down to West Florissant. We've got the advantage of different organizations that have already put their foothold in that area. And if you watch just how fast food locations are thriving. Those were the first buildings that got redeveloped after the tornado. All of them quickly got back up and they're running business as usual. So what does it look like to multiply that, like as a huge investment in that strip? And then suddenly you have another Del Mar loop. You have another Laclede's Landing, I feel like, as you might have downtown. But certainly I think the a big idea would be to completely flood Kings Highway with the franchises of the world, even, of course, the best restaurants, not just fast food, but food in general, being a food hub.
I have a question. Do you think, looking, kind of taking bias aside, like obviously we each want our individual neighborhoods to do as best as they can, do you feel that kind of the greatest return on this money is spending it on, I guess, I think my concern with the significant investment in North City is I think North City is definitely disinvested and has been set aside for a long period of time. But when I look at the future of St. Louis as a whole, I kind of am concerned that the return on the investment there and kind of in terms of the long-term growth and potential of our city maybe isn't as high as kind of putting it other places. And I don't know, just if you have any thoughts or like strongly disagree with that.
Yeah, one thing that I think people forget about when we're talking about the North Side is all the green spaces, Fairgrounds Park. Those spaces bring out opportunity for festivals, bring opportunity for sports leagues, for more activities. And I think that we're forgetting about having those places thrive. And when people can come to go down Natural Bridge and see this huge park that you can fish in, wait, what? What? O'Fallon Park has a pool in it? What? Fair and West Forsyth behind the YMCA, there's another pool. And those aha neighborhood gyms start to support people in seeing themselves there. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think certainly the North Side needs that investment. And when you also think about, sure, the disinvestment and the stories behind that, but we're in like two generations from the disinvestment generation. So where are the kids graduating from WashU or SLU or UMSL? They're looking to stay here. And where can they afford? It's probably going to be in North City. And so let's have fair housing prices for them so that they, who've been educated by our state, can stay and invest more into our city.
Remember the big political fight over how St. Louis should use the Rams settlement money that we told you about? Downtown, the North Side, and crumbling city infrastructure all had strong advocates trying to secure a pile of the one-time funding. Well, in June, the St. Louis Board of Aldermen passed a bill outlining how $255 million of it would be spent.
We are not addressing everyone's needs, whether it's the water department, downtown, the business community, and certainly North St. Louis and those impacted by the tornado. But we all recognize that in order to move forward, we have to compromise, we have to concede, and we have to work together.
Almost a third of the funds will go to the city for public infrastructure. This includes using the money to kickstart replacing aging water mains. Downtown gets about a fifth, $55 million, earmarked for projects in retail, tourism, and the riverfront. The Regional Economic Development Group, Greater St. Louis, Inc., has pledged to facilitate matching those funds, doubling the total investment in that part of the city. And $120 million, the largest portion, but still less than the $150 million residents advocated for, will go toward tornado recovery and North City neighborhood development. The bill was a compromise between competing interests. And bottom line, the funds allocated to each interest falls woefully short from being able to wholly solve the problems they aim to address. For as huge and generational as a one-time nine-figure payment from the NFL is, it's not enough to make everything what it used to be. St. Louisans love to reminisce about the glory days, like Super Bowl championship runs. But leaders are tasked with charting a course for the future with the realities of the present. And they struck a deal. Elected officials gathered input, came together, exchanged ideas, made a decision, and signed their names to it. They found a path and forged ahead. But big questions persist around timelines for spending and oversight of the dollars. Listening to the perspectives of Brendolyn, Eli, and of community members and elected officials made me think of compromise in a new way. It feels less like giving something up and more like finding a path that's viable. Brendolyn and Eli see different paths to prosperity for St. Louis and for their respective communities. Listening to them talk to each other, I hear where their paths diverge, but also a shared sense of being headed in the same direction, forward. You've been listening to Meet Me, a project from St. Louis Public Radio about connecting across divides to find a way forward. In our next newsletter, you'll find more stories about the glory days of the St. Louis Rams. You can sign up at stlpr.org/meetme. This episode was hosted, produced, written, and mixed by me, Luis Antonio Perez, with editing by Brian Heffernan and Alex Hoyer, who also engineered the conversation. Meet Me's engagement producer is Paola Rodriguez, with editorial support from Laura Hamden. Brian Heffernan is our executive producer. Theme music by Cutta and Friends. Special thanks to Dennis Boganovich, Alyssa Potter, Vontrice McDonald, Rachel Lippman, and Sean Malone at KMOX for archival audio. Grant support comes from the James S. McDonald Foundation. Meet Me back here next time.